to our town hall meeting tonight. I appreciate you all being here. And my name is Gary Geeky. I'm the mayor. This is your city council. This has been something that we've been wanting to do well for a while, which is to talk about our state of the city, the pros, the cons, and all that goes into running the city. So this is something that we consider a particularly important event. And so the agenda for tonight is, or let me tell you kind of the format for tonight, which is unlike a city council meeting when there is public comments, you can come and take 3 minutes and say whatever is on your mind. In a town hall meeting, you're not restricted to three minutes. You can talk as much as you like, as long as there's not a long line of people who are also wanting to, you know, speak as well. So we need to just be respectful of that. But you can ask questions of the city council, they can ask questions of you. It's more of a free-flowing type of an environment. So we spent an awful lot of time and effort putting this report together, our state of the city, dealing with important issues within the city. Particular gratitude goes to Councilwoman Reese, who wrote this report and did a tremendous job in this. And so we deal with a lot of issues that we talk about as a city. We talk about ground issues, we talk about the budget, we talk about the golf course. You know, we talk about things that have been on people's minds, and we do it in what I think is an incredibly transparent method of doing that. And so my perspective is that every city in the world has certain issues, Cedar Hills has certain issues, and we try and deal with those issues the best that we can. And that's, you know, part of what our town halls will be over the next year, is to talk about issues of importance to all of us. And so Councilwoman Reese is going to walk us through a lot of this as she has written it, and we have it on the screen behind me as well. And so if there are, if we're dealing with a certain issue and you want to talk specifically to that issue, then just walk up to the mic, state your name, what your address is, and you know, we can begin a dialogue. And I certainly encourage the council's, you know, dialogue and input on all of these issues as well. So is everyone comfortable with that format? Okay? All right. Very good. So, Mrs. Reese, I will turn some time over to you and you can kick off the topic.
Okay, I'm going to go to the microphone so I can see the screen, and I'll go through that first, and then we can do questions if that works.
Very good.
Okay.
Those can also affect your property tax. It's not just the city property tax rate that affects how much you'll pay in property taxes every year. The next one talks about property tax rate, and that's been an eye-opener for me this year and something that's talked about quite a bit. There's two ways that a city can select a tax rate. They can either adopt the Utah County calculated tax rate, or they can keep the same tax rate every year. Traditionally, what Cedar Hills has done is they kept the tax rate steady, and that meant as your home values fluctuated, the city either received more or less revenue. If your home values went up, the city's revenue went up. If your home values decreased, the city revenues increased. The Utah County, what they have done is they come up with a calculated tax rate where they recommend to each city how much you should, what your tax rate should be, so that your revenues will stay consistent year after year, regardless of how those home values are fluctuating. And even though in the past year we traditionally stayed with a flat tax rate, we did decide to adopt a county tax rate this year because our legal expenses have gone up quite a bit. Our legal expenses last year doubled. We are expecting that they'll remain as high this year. We didn't want to cut additional services. There were some things that we already had to cut. We didn't want to cut more. So we went ahead and went to the Utah County tax rate, which means that the tax rate went up to 0.003183. But for residents, that means that what you paid last year is about the same amount that you'll pay Cedar Hills again this year. There's also a lot of talk about the tax rate being the highest in Northern Utah County. And that is true, and there are a few things that account for that. Number one, Cedar Hills is a newer city compared to most of the surrounding cities in our area. So our infrastructure needs were more recently paid for, and other cities like Alpine have had many, many more years to pay for those infrastructure needs, such as buildings and water and sewer. Another thing that's affected that, of course, is the golf course bond. That was voted on by residents in 2005. And so we do have that debt that we have to pay, and that affects our tax rate as well. However, another thing you can look at is the property tax per person. And this chart shows you what the 2011 tax rate was for every city in Northern Utah County, including Cedar Hills, with the golf course bond included. And so you can see that even with the golf course bond included, our property tax per person is still less than Alpine, American Fork and Linden, some of our surrounding cities. We don't have the 2012 tax rates for all the cities surrounding us yet. As soon as we have that information, we'll publish that as well. I know that Highland this year has to do a 56% property tax increase, so their tax rate is going to be very close to ours, if not higher. And Council, please feel free to interrupt me if you have any questions to ask us. The next slide talks a little bit about utility rates, which is also in here. So a few months ago, the city hired Bowen Collins and Associates to do a review of our...
Jenny, just before we move on to the new utility rates, and that's our water, our sewer, our storm drain, are there any questions that anyone has regarding how property taxes are calculated or the discussion that Councilwoman Reese just took us through? Because I don't want to jump to the next data point. If there's any questions about that. So, any comments, thoughts?
Are you going to hit the pie chart later? Like, just as a brief 10-second, here's how much generally goes. There isn't an example of 220,000 home or whatever.
Yes, we actually...
Sorry.
No, you want to go back a little? Trent, can you go back?
If you hammered it home that it was only...
23% of the overall tax. Can you show one more before then? So that one shows the breakdown of how your taxes are differentiated between the different entities. All of these entities in Utah County affect your tax rate.
And it was about $380 out of...
This is an evaluation of homes about $223,000, which is about average in Cedar Hills right now. So for Cedar Hills, out of all those tax entities, Cedar Hills takes about 23% of the overall tax rate that you pay in property taxes. Alpine School District, you go to the next slide. So Cedar Hills, the bond is... As 9%, the city's up approximately 15%, Excel revenue's up. Alpine School District has 52 and 12%, so they're about 64% overall.
And you may have heard it like me. I remember a neighbor saying, my goodness, over the last 5 years, my property taxes have jumped up to blah, blah, blah. And so they're equally mad at everybody.
Right.
But what you just pointed out is that the city has has adopted this structure to maintain something rather mainstream to where it's not jumping, because the things that are talking are these other larger portions of them.
Correct. So for a while, Cedar Hills was using that flat tax rate, which meant as the property values are declining, the Cedar Hills tax rate revenue was actually declining as well. Not considerably, but it was going down a little each year. This year, even with the county capital tax rate, which means it would be consistent. So that's correct. If there have been big jumps or fluctuations in your tax rate that you're paying, it's coming from the other entities and not from the state portion of the property tax.
Thank you for putting that together.
No problem.
Any further questions? Mr. Derringer, do you want to come up?
There hasn't been any real change in the way that taxes are done. It's just that somebody's finally understanding maybe how they arrived at. And the fact is, always when I've talked about taxes in the city, I've only talked about the city portion, not the rest of it. I've always been disappointed in the school district because they always seem to raise theirs, and a lot of people do it. Just, you know, I mean, the county does always adjust it, so it'll be at least as high as it was. And the other thing is, the fact that we have bonds for other things doesn't really have an effect on what our rate is, because really about the only bond we pay through the property tax is the golf bond. And that's always been separated out also. And we always pay about $385,000 a year, approximately. And so, and it seems to me that the per person tax amount is probably not as important as the per household tax amount, because everybody in the family doesn't earn it. And so if you want to find out what each of your household earns, you need to break it down more about the household taxes. And I don't know why, but it seems to me that, I don't know who prepared that chart there. Is that something you got from?
Go back to the...
This one right here.
Oh, this one.
No, that one.
Yeah. So all we did is took the numbers from the evaluation you get from the county.
Yeah. All I see is it showed the 15 and 9, and it should probably be 9 and 14.
Right.
Just before you round it to 23% is about the actual number.
Right.
Based on that. So at any rate, my suggestion sometime would be that, as far as I'm concerned, your utilities, everything else that goes into the tax should be called tax, because that's really what it is.
Sure.
And also, when you compare with these other cities, we don't have a fire department as such. We pay a separate fire department fee. I think our police fee is probably included, maybe included in the property taxes, I don't know. But anyway, so it makes it very hard anytime to compare the number of taxes per individual until you really break it down and see what that city is, you know, is included in its property tax and what they're paying for. You know, they have their own fire department and their own police department. I'm thankful that Cedar Hills has thus far chosen to work with other cities and use their facilities, and I think it's probably kept us down or being a lot higher. So anyway, I appreciate you bringing it up to the citizens, because that's always the way I've done it. And most people don't really understand, like you said, it was a revelation to you this year, right?
Right, the two different ways that you can actually.
So, okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Can I make a comment on that? I think you bring up a good point. Our utility fees are like taxes. I think that the big difference is that they're collected in a different way. Property taxes are collected based on the valuation of your home, whereas the utility fees tend to be based on usage. the police department comes for the most part out of property tax, the fire department, the public safety district portion kind of comes out of both. And we did increase the, we had an EMS fee to the bill.
I was thinking of bonds, like the irrigation bonds.
Yeah, and all those, you're right, they're covered via the utility fees based on your usage as opposed to what your home valuation is.
But there is a separate charge for the irrigation bond. It's the same for everybody. It's the same, $15.95.
Right. And so, but it's the same for everybody, whether your house is worth $1 million or $200,000. That's the difference between that and property tax. And so, I think that you're right. This picture is focusing mainly on property tax based on the valuation of your home as opposed to an overall picture of how much money you're paying to the city. And I think
citizens probably ought to be aware of what their valuation is. Because for 5 years I just let them go and I'm trying to find home with a big value of $580,000 more than what it should have been.
Mm-hmm. And I think it would be worthwhile for us to maybe make a bigger picture of throwing in the fees and showing how that breaks down, because those are things that we pay and they are life taxes, but they are assessed differently than property taxes.
Thank you. And so I guess the biggest point that I learned through this process is that maybe like a lot of you, for a lot of years, when our property taxes came, or when election came, and there was a motion by the Alpine School District, or in my case, where I grew up, the Granite School District in Salt Lake, you didn't really think about that, you know, in terms of to be against it or for that. But it becomes very clear to me how much of our property taxes goes directly to the Alpine School District. And so, it just behooves us as residents and citizens in this area to take particular notice of any time that there is a large bond or a large spending increase that the Alpine School District wants to bring about. We should look at that closely and see if that's something that we are in favor of or not in favor of. So, any further questions on the property tax calculation before we move on to another topic? Okay. Great. Mrs. Reese, why don't you
want? Okay, so the next one was the utility rate. So a few months ago, the city hired Bowen Palm and Associates to come in and do an analysis for us and determine if our rates were where they needed to be. And the things that we wanted to look at is we wanted to maintain our quality, have reliable water, PI, sewer, and stormwater resources. We wanted to encourage wide maintain stable revenue generation and then minimize long-term costs by avoiding debt. We talked a second ago about some cities nearby who have had to increase their property tax significantly to pay for infrastructure needs. And what we wanted to do is more accurately prepare for those future needs. And BCA determined that the replacement value for our water system was $34.5 million, $21 million for the PI system, $49 million for the sewer system, and $15 million for the sewer system. So taking that all into account and knowing what our future needs were going to be, we needed to make sure that our costs were going to cover all that, our revenue were going to cover those costs. And then three main areas that they looked at are the operation and maintenance for those utilities, the debt service that we have that Mr. Derringer talked about, the bonds that we have for our culinary well, the public works building, and also the capital improvements and expenditures. So the overall recommendation that they gave us was this. They recommended no increase for the pressurized irrigation system. They did recommend a culinary water increase, a sewer increase, and a storm drain increase. And those overall percentages each year from 2013 to 2022 range from 3.7% to 4.3%. And one thing that Bowen Collins and Associates had said was at that point was that under the circumstances, they thought that was actually very good because the percent increase each year was just slightly over inflation. The next slide will also talk about cost of service principles. One of the things that ECNA really recommended is that we change the way we're billing to more accurately reflect cost of service principles. So the charges that we set up to residents are to cover exactly the service that they're getting. It's not a profit generation mechanism, it's a revenue to bring in to cover costs. So on the water, what they recommended that we do is that instead of basing it on equivalent residential unit, which is what we had been doing, they asked for that we should change it to a meter size, which better shows the capacity to utilize water. So again, it's that cost of service, how much of a resident is actually using it on their water. They also recommended that we reduce the first volume block from 8,000 gallons, or sorry, from 10,000 gallons to 8,000 gallons. The average customer in Cedar Hills uses about 6,100 gallons each month. On the pressurized irrigation, they recommend that we change to a base rate determined on connection size instead of lot size. On the sewer, they recommend that we change it to base, like the water, the meter size, which shows the capacity to produce wastewater. And on the storm drain, they recommend that we have a base rate for all residential customers or commercial customers on a lot 0.3 acres or less, and then the larger commercial lots will get a base rate plus the volume rate based on their lot size, and that will distribute the cost more fairly to those larger entities that require greater infrastructure, and again, cost of service, putting those costs upon the entities that are using them more fairly. So that actually, I went pretty quickly over that one. In the budget document, you'll see the breakdown of what the water rates will be. There's actually four different groups on the water rates. There is a rate for those who are, there is inclinary water that have PI connected and are using it. There's a different rate for people who have water available but no PI available. We didn't feel it was fair to assess higher cost to those residents, and they didn't have the capacity to utilize the PI system. So as they use more volume, that lock rate is smaller. And then there's also the water PI not connected, and that's a higher rate for residents who have the capacity to connect to the PI system or selecting not to, and to encourage them to be more resourceful with the culinary water, their rate is slightly higher because they're going up in volume. Questions on the study, or if the council has additional input on that?
I know that's kind of technical in terms of its nature, in terms of the water, sewer, and storm drain, but I'd just like to get a feel in terms of where you guys are. Does that make sense to you in terms of what we've decided to do? Is that unlike some of our neighboring sister cities who knew that they had issues coming forward, they failed to deal with that until it became a big enough problem that they had to raise property taxes. What we're trying to do is plan for the future so that there is not a major increase in anyone's property taxes. There's just a gradual increase that is due to the operations and maintenance of our sewer, storm drain, and our water usage, as opposed to being a revenue center. So hopefully that makes sense to everyone in terms of why we did that and why we're going in that direction.
So just to clarify really quick, none of these fees come out of the property tax. These are all use fees based on the utilities and the design. Just to reiterate that the design is to anticipate the future changes and have a gradual increase in the fees to cover the costs, the future costs, as opposed to subsidizing over time until it's too hard, and then to have a sharp increase in order to balance it back out. We want to try to keep those costs in the fees to be in line with the costs, so that it comes out neutral as opposed to negative.
Got a bunch of questions.
A couple of those replacement costs were really high dollars. For instance, if you could again state the PI system, the replacement cost was $29.
So to replace the water system would be $34.5 million.
$34 million. Which water system?
The culinary.
Okay. What I was trying to assess was to replace the PI system would be this much.
How
originally on the books, it cost us several years ago this much. There's an intrinsic value there that I think the residents, we don't know. It's like, wow, look at the value we have on our PI system. And oh yeah, that was buried in the cost of this golf course. We get these ponds that we get to use of our PI system. Those are the sort of things I find kind of interesting that maybe I don't know enough of, and I, wonder how many of the residents know we've got some value going here.
Absolutely. And what Mr. Rodder is referring to is the pond at the golf course are actually serving as our pressurized irrigation collection. So how do you build something like Highland did somewhere else, or using those ponds that are within the OPI reserves? Mr. Lauder and Ms. Johnson are actually going to be serving on a committee where we may bring in more town hall meetings that focus in on something specific like that. So we're going to get a better picture on, you know, what are we actually done and how the golf course is part of that. I think those are very beneficial.
Mr. Geddes.
Do you know how many of the residents are not accessible to the PI system and it's your last to come in? I don't have that.
We
can
get that.
I mean, is it significant? Is there
No, it's a very small number.
Because I was going to wonder how are you going to distinguish when you go from the use of people that have access to the PI system but aren't using it. Their water rate goes up as they use more, as opposed to people who don't have PI. I mean, how to distinguish those? I guess you know that.
Yeah. Public Works Committee. This is Jeff Knight. He's our Public Works Director, and I'm sure that you probably know by council which ones have access to PI system and which ones don't.
We do.
Okay. So the utility billing is set up already in line which households have access to it and aren't using it, and which ones just don't have access to it.
But I don't know if really a
true
way of knowing people are using it. I mean,
but you would know because
you did not monitor them when we got them all up and hooked up to them. I don't think
there's supposed to be an inspection that we don't monitor the amount that you use.
Right. That's
there, as you hook up to it, there's supposed to be an inspection where we can account for it. If you hooked up without an inspection, then we probably don't know.
Maybe actually on our water program. Usually the computer picks that out so that we can investigate if somebody or somebody that is using an excessive amount of water, and then we know whether they can connect to the PI. So they do monitor it out of order, but not by accident.
Mr. Derringer, did you have a question on this?
I guess if you say you have not taken into account the replacement cost. Expected life. You haven't had a sinking fund that you've been creating in this house on the utilities or the other systems.
So if you look at page 12, this was a chart that PG&E put together showing the black line shows that if we continue with our existing charges, where we would fall short on those maintenance needs. I don't know in the past what the finance department has looked at as far as future meetings of the company inside, if you're aware of that. I don't know how often they have that review around.
It's probably every 5 to 10 years. And we were due for that, and that's why we did that study. And we were coming up short. We were accounting for it a little bit, and that's why if you see that the black line was above the numbers, but I don't know if we had the right trajectory, and that's why we do these reviews periodically. That will take into account the changes in costs to replace. So as you mentioned, you know, we spent so much money for the API system, the cost to replace it is significantly more. The cost to replace it is more, and part of that is just the increased cost of the increased cost, it'll be in the future to replace that. If those costs were remain equal over a long period of time, then it would probably be around what we paid originally for it.
In their study, did they change the expected lives of the facility that you have at all, or what you had expected before?
They reviewed them, and I don't know if they changed the lives, the expected life of it, or I'm not sure.
Yes, ma'am.
As the money for the replacement and repair of the old cost, there's a reserve. How will you reserve that so that will be used for
Right, and so.
Yeah.
So, do you want to answer that question?
You could set up restricted fund, but oh well.
Charlotte, can you stand up to a mic so that everyone can hear you?
Charlotte, our finance director.
Who's that one?
But he's taken over the last couple months by putting him on the spot.
Yeah.
spot here. Sorry, Charles.
Yeah. The fees that are collected are unrestricted as far as inside the fund itself, but the council could pass something budget-wise that would set aside like some fund balance for it, and so it would be up to the finance department recommending to the council this is how much or how much each year we want to set aside, and so you can see it as a line item in the financial statement.
It is. So he's talking about multiple funds, and the way that we do our accounting, we have different funds, and for instance, the property tax and stuff goes into a general fund, and we have a water and we have a water fund and a sewer fund, and the fund balance. So as we collect the reserves for the water, it would go into the water fund, and so there we're already accounting for them different than we would say the general fund that goes to general activities. It's unrestricted in the sense that we legally could move it from the water fund to the general fund, and we could decide if that's a good, you know, if we want to protect ourselves against that or not. But it's already accounted for separately, so it won't get lost just in the shuffle. We would have to make a conscious decision to do that, and the question is whether or not that's legal or not.
So what Scott was actually talking about on that screen right now, these are the five funds that we have in our budget. So the money, that revenue that comes in from the fees associated with water, sewer, and storm drain actually go directly into that fund. They don't go into the recreation fund, they don't go into the general fund.
So this is a good example of why we need citizens to be involved. Because every year the city council will review the budget and can make decisions like Scott is saying about, hey, we're going to take some money out of this fund and move it to this other fund. And if you don't like that, if you're saying, hey, I want those funds stuck in the utility capital revenue funds that we can spend those on, specifically the water system, you need to be involved so that you're saying, hey, I don't like what you're doing there with the budget. If you're not involved, then a future city council will have to work on, could come in and decide to do whatever they want to.
Now, these increased charges, this is so we, I'm just thinking here, but this is so we don't have to replace the system.
So we don't bond.
So we don't have to bond and replace the whole thing. So it's not like you're going to see $50 million saved up. This is paying for ongoing maintenance, like an oil change for your car. So you should see the money be spent over time. There shouldn't be a lot built up.
The graphs show a portion each year that goes to capital expenditures, which is to do the repairs, which is accounted for separately than just the ongoing maintenance. But it's not like there's no capital expenditures for 10 years and then a great big one. What we'll do is we'll distribute how we go and replace that. So we will replace maybe one neighborhood in this one year and another neighborhood another year, and use those monies to try to keep them pretty close to constant, so that we don't have huge fund balances. Plus, it takes time and effort to do those repairs, and you don't want to do all the repairs in one year. You want to distribute them out so that we can get what we need done and not have everything fail at once.
Mr. Latter?
Just that people don't panic. This isn't new. We have been doing this. The city has been doing this for several years. So we don't have to, oh my gosh, we dodged a bullet. No, we've been doing it. And several years ago, you might remember when we went on to the rationing of water on certain days, if you remember that. And because our wells, you know, they went dry up there, those tanks, and they had to suddenly spend a lot of money that was already approved for and saved, so that they can get the capacity going in the tank. Same thing happens with our roads. You look at our budget the last couple of years, right? We've had a big variance in our roads because they didn't do it all the same year, or it didn't happen the year that they thought they might happen, and went to the next year. So monies are always accrued and saved this way. These guys are just right on top of it, doing it really well. But let's not think that it just started, we dodged a bullet, we might end up like Highland, jumping our property tax 50%. No, it's always been done.
That's right, and the key is that we have the periodic review so that we make sure that the amount that we do every year is in line. If we didn't do that periodically, then we would be on the wrong trajectory, and then we find out one year that everything's breaking and we don't have enough money in the reserves because we hadn't been accounting for it properly. And so we do this periodically, and we'll do it again in a few years, and just again to make sure that we're on the right trajectory.
Okay. Any further questions on our utility rate study?
I do.
Go ahead.
So I'm anticipating questions that residents are going to ask me, and I'm looking at page 14, and we have these new recommended culinary rates. So I'm looking at page 14, and we have these recommended new monthly base rates. And I'm looking at the table thinking, okay, I need to figure out if my base rate is going to go up or not, because I don't know. How do I know what site is in
here? So there's a little bubble here on the left-hand side, and that's actually a great question. If residents don't know, the best thing to do is to contact our finance department, and they'll be able to let you know. But also, yes.
Yeah. Our utility person's name is Zach, and I talked to him right before I came, and you don't have to know your meter size because these are mostly for commercial. Everyone gets charged the lowest meter size, base rate. Doesn't matter what size meter, the residential, they get charged the lowest meter size. The only time you get charged on, if you look at the pressurized irrigation rate, that's by lot size. But Jeff's nodding his head, the public works guy, so he agrees.
And I mean, as far as like, the culinary water rates, again, I mean, it's based on the meter size, but what? All residents are on that three quarters or lower.
Three quarter. Yeah. There might let Jeff explain.
Residential lots have we have 3 meter sizes. There's a few 5/8 inch. We have vast majority is a 3/4 inch meter, and we have a few 1 inch meters where they have a large elevation change. And there is no difference in the base rate that's calculated in that. The first slide that we went to, everybody pays for the first X amount of dollars, gallons, 8,100 gallons, and then it's usage after that. So it doesn't matter which size meter you have until you get into a commercial situation. And then we adjust that for the capacity that they could use. But we also meter there, it's just a different rate.
Thank you.
Any further questions on our new utility rates? Okay to move on? Okay, Mrs. Reese, why don't you proceed?
Okay, so the next part is that we're going to talk about is the budget. And we talked about these five funds a little bit already. The city has five main funds that we work with. The capital projects fund, the general fund, the motor pool fund, the water sewer, storm rain fund, and the community recreation fund. And this just shows the relationship of those funds and how they can feed into each other. The next slide talks about the general fund. So the general fund is our chief operating fund. That's where the taxes that come into this fund, the expenses that come out are for things such as our public works department, our public savings we talked about, finance department, the various departments that we have in the city. The budget is fairly lengthy. It is available on our website. But what I wanted to do really was highlight some of the key points that were different from 2012 fiscal year. The revenue increases expected coming from sales and use tax. Again, we talked about our legal expenses in fiscal year 2012. They more than doubled, and we're expecting those to continue to either stay the same from 2012 or rise. Loan public safety changed the methodology for how to determine costs, but we saw an increase for fiscal year 2013 at $130,000. And then this year, we also have a planned subsidy of $65,000 to the golf course. In the past, that wasn't actually shown as a transfer from the general fund to the golf course fund. We are going to show that now as a subsidy transfer from the general fund to the golf course fund, and it will show up as a subsidy for any losses that occur. The next fund is the capital project fund.
really quick before we start.
Yes.
Are there any questions on the general fund?
Okay, so the capital project fund is what we use in projects such as buildings, parks, trails, streets. Again, we're showing here the revenues and the expenditures. The biggest changes from 2012 to 2013, there are three projects that are being discussed for fiscal year 2013. And when I say discussed, that means the council hasn't voted on it, and you haven't decided that we're sure doing that. These are things that are being discussed as a possibility for this year. Those things are restrooms and storage building at the Peace Park, the community recreation center basement. We actually did a town hall meeting last Tuesday, and I hope that you were able to be here, where we presented some options and we got some great resident feedback on how to proceed with that. And then the splash pad has also been discussed, again, not voted on, and are actually, it was discussed as an option. We haven't even discussed the location on that one yet. There are also some long-term projects that are on part of the fund that are planned for this year. The biggest one being the acquisition and development of Deerfield Park and the widening of Harvey Boulevard, which goes in conjunction with that park. So you'll see on the expenditures of the park portion was very large. That particular park has been something that we've been in negotiations with on the Harvey Valley for quite some time. I'm not quite sure when that will be resolved, but we do have to keep that in our fund as available, so that way if it comes to a resolution, we have those funds available. And then lastly, the payments for the public works building come out of this fund. The public safety building was paid off in 2012. It was actually paid off 7 years early, which is a great thing for our city. Questions on the capital project fund? Okay, the next one is the motor pool fund. And there isn't a lot to talk about on this one. The motor pool fund is the fund that we use for the acquisition, maintenance, and use of city-owned vehicles. And there really aren't any significant changes from the prior years to this fund. Okay, and then the next one is the water. Yes.
Seems to be in the year or two or three ago that somebody said they determined that they should replace vehicles every 3 years. That was the most economical way to do it. I've never been able to work it that way in my life. But I was just wondering what tricks to use to make it so that you should replace vehicles. How much less it costs to do it, to replace vehicles every 3 years.
That's really a recommendation that has come from our finance department. They look at the value of the asset of depreciation. I know that we've been fairly successful in keeping those costs fairly steady as far as the amount that we're able to sell it for versus what you pay for. I don't know if you guys have more info on that one. So that recommendation comes from the finance team.
Oh, do you want? Okay. Well, I can give you details. I can't tell you why. The life that we have currently on the vehicle is 7 years. So straight line depreciation. So if you take 3 years off the life and we sell it, we're selling it for more than the 3 years that we would depreciate. So that's the math behind it. So if you have a $20,000 truck and it's 7 year life, so that's about $3,000 a year. So we say it loses about, because we're getting on a state contract, so we're probably getting a better price than most people can get on their own. So let's say it's $21,000, they lose $3,000 in depreciation each year, in theory. So the price comes down to $12,000 is what's on the book. We sell it for $17,000, we make $5,000 on the car, and that money goes back into the motor pool fund.
Well, so the trouble is depreciation, you don't make money off depreciation, you right. Don't make money off what you bought it for and what you sell it for, and what
well,
the cost
right.
The population is in between. So what they're saying,
I thought
Conrad told me once, sold the cars for more than you actually paid for them, but
after depreciation.
He forgot to mention depreciation, because you're going to get the biggest depreciation
Yeah, and that's something maybe the Finance Committee can look at as far as what they think the life of the vehicle is, you know, and since they're mostly used for public works, they probably are getting heavy use, so I don't know if that's probably pretty reasonable, but, you know, I'm not sure what the market standard is.
Also, I'm wondering about in connection with the use of the vehicles, the gas, license, insurance, all of those things. The city paid for those or any employee that uses them, whether it's private use or the other use, or does it depend on the employee, or how does that work?
There are, I think there's two employees that have city-owned vehicles that they use, and so the city does, and the city does pay for the gas and the registration for those vehicles as well. And so when they're taking a look at our motor vehicle pool fund, then they do take into consideration all those things that Cheryl mentioned as in terms of the life of the vehicle. So I think that we've done a good job in terms of turning over vehicles when they're still valuable. And so there is a conversation that can be had, Jerry, in terms of the depreciation that goes along with those as well. So I think your point's well taken on that. Any further questions on the motor vehicle fund? Okay, go ahead.
All right. Next one is the water, sewer, and storm rate fund, which we just talked about with utility rates. So the revenue that comes in from the charges that we assess for these services, and the expenses are for the costs associated with providing services. Highlights that are different from 2012, the increases in revenue are mainly due to that increase in utility rates that we just talked about, that was recommended by the utility rate study. And then one thing I wanted to point out is that the payments for tree bonds actually come from this fund. Two are for the PI system and one is for the redundant culinary well. Mr. Lauer brought that up a little bit ago. We have a redundant culinary well, so that way, if anything happens to our main culinary well, we have that backup. The facility provides culinary water to our residents. The PI system, the first one was to install and implement a PI system, and the second one was a smaller bond for some maintenance fees that were needed on that system. So those payments for those bonds come out of this fund. Questions on that one?
I wanted to mention on the redundant culinary well that we talked about, also has a generator on it. And so for the emergency situation, if you go down, we do have a generator that is on our well.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so the last one is the community recreation fund. So this one shows the revenue that comes in through the various things that occur mainly at the building, the green fees, practice ranges, sessions, the grill, recreation programs that are done here at the rec center. Expenses include the cost associated with running the facility and the golf course. The property tax revenue that is collected for the fund that you see there in kind of the lighter blue is used to pay that golf course bond. And that goes back to that first part of the property tax portion we're talking about, where it shows exactly on your valuation how much you pay for that golf course bond. So those revenues that come in pay for that bond. And then the recreation revenues and expenses are for the golf course, the grill, the recreation programs, and the community recreation center. And again, on here you can see in the orange, the subsidy that is coming from the general fund. So we're actually transferring that money over to cover projected losses for the golf course. Questions on that one?
Okay, so you can do a couple of options when you do fitness classes through the city. You can either buy a monthly pass, which is between $10 and $15, which gives you access, I think it's $15, all access to all fitness programs. You can, if you wanted to do 5 a day, you can do 5 a day, it's the same cost. Or say you are only going to go once a week to one class, you can buy a punch pass, and that is like a 10 punch pass, and it comes out to be $3 a class. So you can choose kind of which best suits you. Sometimes we're trying to get more, we have a lot of adult programs right now, and we're trying to increase our kids program. So a lot of our kids actually have punch passes, and our adults have monthly passes. So we're trying to get that so that people are buying a pass.
So it would be user fee covering the cost of our
instructors. Yeah. So they make about $15 a class, and they're ranging from 5 to, one of our classes, our Lou Atomic kids class, the other day has 31 kids in it. So if you can see, some of them are very popular, some of them are not, and some of them have fabulous instructors that have a following, and so it just kind of depends on what time of day it is, what the class is, but yeah.
Stephanie, our recreation team has been really good at consistently reviewing those classes and figuring out, she said, which ones do we want to continue to offer, which ones do we not want to, which ones do we need to add. So that way we're utilizing the facility as much as we can, and that we're providing them.
But I'll just add to that. I'll give you an example. So we have a yoga class that takes place on Thursday night, and it just got started, but we've canceled it a couple of times. And that's frustrating to the instructor because we've canceled it twice. And also to the flow of results in essence. And so if we have people wanting to book this building to hold a meeting, and we're holding it for one yoga, for a yoga class for one participant, it's that balance that the recreation department is working through. So this is one of the things that we talked about last week at our town hall meeting, is the importance of the basement being finished, because then that puts more of our recreation program downstairs and kind of frees up this for events and businesses and golf tournaments. That recreation balance is tough, and they do their best to do it. Okay, so we have Greg Gordon, who's our recreation director, and he's over all of the golf operations and also the recreation department, so, and the group. So he, in essence, has like three departments that he runs. And then we have our golf manager, which is Wade, a fabulous, fabulous guy that we got from Fox Hollow, and Fox Hollow's been pretty mad at us. And then we have Katie Whitaker, who is our recreation manager, and she's over like top soccer, flag football, lacrosse, any of the programs that go in here, plus she also does events. And under her, there's two coordinators. And then we have our grill staff, McCord, McCord's last name, because I didn't call by his first name. And he is our grill manager, and then he has a staff that's under him. And then obviously golf has staff under them. I mean, it's a big department, and let me tell you, I think that Cedar Hill takes their recreation very seriously compared to other cities surrounding us. And we're committed to recreating in our communities. And so it is a large portion of our staff. But it's also part of our direction.
You probably stated last week how much is still left out of our fund, our rent fund, for basement and other.
So are you talking the impact fees?
The impact fees, how much is there? What was the estimate? I think the most expensive one was option A. Just kind of wondering.
So we have $170,000 in our impact fee fund. And, you know, honestly, we don't know right now of what the cost of the basement would be. We're trying to kind of get a direction of where the resident, you know, where everybody's comfortable at with the four options. And so I think we had a great discussion. And we plan on moving forward and presenting a plan to the council to go out and get it. And then we'll see how much it costs. So, I don't want to guess on a number because, you know, until you get a bid.
Yeah, I just think with that discussion, it's hard to have that discussion. It's easy to sit around and talk about what we want, but if we're talking about funds that are use it or lose it, and now we want to use them all because we don't want to give them back. So
I don't think that 170 right now we're in jeopardy of losing that.
Right. I'm just saying for someone like me, maybe I want the world if it's going to fit and use those use or lose the funds. If we go beyond that, maybe I don't care about using these other things. So putting that discussion of which option into context without the context of let's use this is free money, quote, versus this is money that we're going to use out of our discretionary funds. I don't want to do that. So it's very hard for me to have that kind of discussion unless it's in the context wrapped in what funds are we going to be using here for that paper.
And we did talk about that a little bit last week. We talked about, you know, there's essentially three funds that we can pull from. There's the impact fees, there's the care tax, and then there's the general unrestricted funds. We can choose how we want to do it. The two restricted funds don't have a lot of other uses, and so they're good ones to pull from. They do have time restrictions on them. And we have been trying to talk in kind of ballpark terms what those different options are, because you're right. If option A costs, you know, $500,000 and we don't have $500,000 in the fees, it's probably not, it may not be a good option. Whereas there may be one that kind of fits better, and those are the discussions that we need to have, but it's really hard to get good, to estimate the cost without going through some cost to figure out the cost. So we have to try to, we're trying to kind of narrow down the scope of what's way out and not worry about those and focus on the ones that are maybe people tend to agree on. Some of these options, we can spend a little bit more time to understand those costs better and match them with the money that we have in the different funds.
So I'm just going to add on. So one of the things that took place last week at the town hall meeting is that Jill Griffiths, who's one of our recreation instructors, and she kind of helps us with all of our other instructors, had made a comment about needing more space. And there's been a flip-flop, we call it, it's a flip-flop in the basement, which is which use goes on which side. And so they've been flip-flopped like 4 or 5 times. And so currently right now, underneath us, which we call the south side, is like recreation, fitness equipment, and the bouldering room. And then on the north side is where we have the fitness classes that has like a ballet bar and the mirror. And one of the things that she said is that she wanted more space, so it just flipped us. And, you know, I went home that night and I was like, wow, we really had that wrong, you know. But then as I sat there and thought about it, one of the reasons why they were portioned like that is because we have an ADA ramp that will be going downstairs that hooks in on the north end, and we don't want someone coming down and having to go between the fitness equipment, and also there is a family restroom that's down on the north end. And so those access points, we needed a more of an open room, so it was kind of like this trade-off of, you know, what works and what doesn't work, but to have that conversation, I think, to we're getting every little piece of information out to know what we need in that basement to make it work. And so it was interesting to have that conversation and then to come back and think about that process. Literally, I think we walked through that basement 100 times talking about all the little teeny details to try to make sure that we get it right the first time. So, and that conversation last week was great.
Thank you. Any further questions on the Community Recreation Fund?
I'm just going to make another point. Like Steph said, this is going to be an ongoing process, and the town hall meeting that we had last week was great, but I would encourage residents to stay involved. You know, we're progressing. Continue to provide your feedback and let us know what your thoughts are.
As you find Jim, where will you be communicating? We're getting closer on these options.
Yeah, we're certainly going to be communicating that through city council meeting discussions, but I'm sure we're going to get it on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, but also on the city's website as well. So every avenue that we have in order to get any message out, we are going to do that. I think that we are going to, whether it's the golf course, whether it's the family festival, whatever it happens to be, we always feel like there's certain people who are not hearing what's going on in the city, and so we're going to use every effort that we can come up with, including texting and things like that, and to let people know what's going on in the city so they can participate, so they can know about the issues and talk informed on those issues as well. Okay?
Okay, Mayor, can I ask that? So, if any of you are Facebook or Twitter followers, we do have a Facebook and Twitter site that Jenny does, and one of the cool things, and I know Jenny follows, but Harriman City uses their Facebook and their Twitter site, their social media, to totally inform their residents. The thing is that they have a high participation. They have 7,000 followers. And we're at 100?
Yeah, 85.
85. So if you have Facebook or you are a Twitter, go home and like us or follow us, and then invite your social Cedar Hill media friends to do the same. So information is power. About that. Just 1 second as well.
So this slide talks about the city debt continues on the budget. This shows what our current city debt is. So we talk about the golf course bond, it shows the biggest issue, the original amount, and then the balance. We have the two PI bonds, the one we talked about, it was the original setting up of the PI system, and then an improvement bond. We have the public works building, which is the one on Canyon Road, the Cotton Well, which is redone as well, and then we have two capital leases for golf carts. And I know that the finance team has been working on a plan with that, where instead of having these ongoing leases, we'll purchase smaller portions more consistently instead of having to buy a large amount all at once. So highlights from last year, the public safety building was paid off in 2012, which again was 7 years early. Four capital leases of golf carts and equipment were paid off in 2012 as well, and the overall debt of the city was reduced $1,070,000 during that fiscal year, and that's the plan that we want to continue on, is reducing that debt. Mayor Dean talked a lot about our commercial district and the hope that we have on that, because revenue is coming in, so we should focus on reducing our debt. Questions on how much the city owes right now? And the last thing I have is something you said on page 6. We talk about the ways that we're trying to communicate with residents. At the bottom of that page, we have our Facebook page address, we have our Twitter address, we have our website. I have a blog that I maintain that I put all my council notes on. We've updated our website. We have a transparency button on there now that actually we changed the format of the newsletter a little bit so that way you're getting information directly from the council, from the mayor. You may have seen the newsletter that we're trying to put email addresses so that way we can use that as a mechanism to inform residents of upcoming meetings or urgent items that they can be aware of. We have automated phone systems that we will utilize for urgent and emergency situations. So if you do not have your phone number associated with the city, please contact us to get us that information. Something like that would be very beneficial situation like Alpine has with the cell phone. And then the State of the City newsletter, we've heard from a lot of residents that we have all these electronic options, but they read their newsletter and that's it. And so we're trying to find ways that we can communicate with residents who may not prefer to go this route. So really the social media is the fastest way to get information to you, and that's the way you can get that information back. In the newsletter here, we talk about quite a few other things. We have the org chart, we have a message from the mayor, we have Brown requests. Obviously, some of these topics are discussed in more detail, so at this point, I will just open it up to any additional questions, and thank you for coming tonight.
One point I want to make on what Councilwoman Reese and Councilwoman Martinez talked about regarding our social media, and so it isn't just because, we're like a lot of friends on our Facebook, there's a safety component to this. And so if we were to have some sort of a natural catastrophe, we sit on a fault line, so we worry about earthquakes. But I've also learned, having lived in Salt Lake my entire life, I never expected to see a tornado, yet we had one in downtown Salt Lake City a few years ago. I used to travel to New York a lot. I didn't think it was possible that New York could have a tornado yet. There was a tornado watch, which was a month or so ago. My point is that we could have any type of natural disaster depending on the weather conditions which could be created. And so in certain natural catastrophe situations, then communication may not be possible at all, including social media. However, it may be, and so that may be a way for you to communicate to your family outside the area that you're okay. And knowing that, you know, what's going on with Cedar Hills in terms of what we're providing and what we can do. So we're holding discussions with some of the church leaders in this area so we can coordinate their efforts with our efforts in order to make sure that everyone knows what the city is doing, and we know what the local churches are doing in terms of what they can, you know, provide. So it is important that when you go home, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, to you know, like us as a friend in Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Those things are important. So any further questions on any of the topics that we discussed tonight? We certainly appreciate you being here and participating in this. I wish we had a lot more people that were here to participate in these things. Mr. Derringer?
I think, unfortunately, you've got to figure out a better way of communicating other than putting a city website and posting on some obscure billboards somewhere. The only reason I find out is somebody else tells me, is I don't look at those things all the time. And I'm not sure what the best way is.
We did have some flyers that were put on theoretically every single door in Cedar Hills over the last couple of weeks. Hopefully one ended up on each of your doors, and that's why you're here.
I don't remember seeing them.
Okay. And so,
of course, I have a long driveway.
and so I think that we understand what you're saying, Jerry, is that sometimes people don't go to our website, they don't go to Facebook, or any of the social media outlets that we have. And that's why we wanted to put a flyer on every single door. And hopefully every single door will receive one. And
that's been a big challenge for us, is finding effective ways to communicate with residents. And like I said, we're trying a variety of options. We're trying the social media. We're trying the website. We're trying the monthly newsletter. We're trying this annual newsletter. We're trying town hall meetings. But it's still a challenge. And so any advice or recommendations or input that you have, that any resident has for ways that we can communicate with residents, we would love to hear them, because that's very important to us. We want to be able to communicate with residents.
Okay, sir.
Are these meetings regular?
They haven't been in the past. Our hope is that they will be going forward. And that's why we hope that more people will show up and participate in these town hall meetings. We do have some more scheduled. We have one scheduled in November that's going to deal with the complete history of the golf course, all of the finances. That's been the most controversial issue for our city for a decade or so. And so in an incredibly transparent way, we're going to talk about all of that. You know, so
when does that meeting?
It is on November the 15th, which is a Thursday night. So, but we will have as many town halls as are feasible, and if people show up, we will have many more. I hope, you know, more people show up in the future. Mr. Whitlock.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment. I'd just like to commend you for this. I commend the mayor and the council. Ben Jenny did such a wonderful job on the document. Nobody had any questions. They didn't feel the need to show up. I just really would like to commend each one of you for what you're doing here for our city. I don't think it's appreciated enough. I guess, like I said, I take it off.
Thank you very much. So, just a question to you guys. And so you're here, so I'm assuming that you either read the report or you glanced through it, right? Is that correct? Any feedback from you guys? Was this helpful? Our plan is to do this every year. So once a year, you're going to get a state of the city report, so you know exactly what's going on. And so if you do have some thoughts, I would like to hear them. Mr. Lowry.
There's a lot there. So I can see where someone might get overwhelmed. Oh my gosh, it's 32 pages. I don't know. Maybe even the suggestion, hey, just take one topic per evening when reviewing it, something to get them to look at it. because I don't think you could really shorten it. There's a lot of information to cover.
Right.
You guys did a fabulous job of laying out section by section. And I don't know how we get people here other than maybe we bribe them. Maybe we get an ice cream for your kid. I don't know. We may have to bribe them if we feel it's worth it. Right?
Well, you know, and I have... Can you say that one more time?
The little highlights that Jenny brought out.
Yes.
Those were almost as important as the chart. Because those were like the real milestones. So even if you just put those in the newsletter, like it would be a subtraction.
Right.
And they're in this one on under the budget sections as well.
Yeah.
You mean in the monthly newsletter?
Well, just like a lot of the highlights you brought out were things you could
just
that's all people really
want to
know.
Okay.
I think we are going to try and get this out, in every way that we can. It's a challenge every month to be able to find room in the newsletter because there's so many things that we're trying to get in there. But we will continue to effort to trying to make sure that every issue that we deal with is dealt with is communicated to you guys in a very transparent way. And so the feedback that I've got so far from, a lot of residents is that this was a good thing, that they really enjoyed the news, the state of the city report, and felt like it's something that they've been wanting for a long time. So hopefully you guys feel that way as well. Mr. Geddes, you?
One thing, I know you dedicated about 3 or 4 pages to the grammar request topic. For that format, I thought it was perfect. For those of us that weren't aware of really what happened, other than the bits and pieces you got from the news and things like that. So I commend you for that, the way you laid it out. I thought it explained it very well. I hope we can get it resolved. Move on.
Thank you very much. Anything else? Yes,
sir. I remember the neighborhood signs that they put up for same day reminders. A lot of church meetings.
You mean like those A-frame type signs? That
well, I don't know about that, but at least something big enough that people can actually read it when they're driving by. They have tonight and I are going to be discussing such and such. Don't forget a rec center or whatever, 6 o'clock. And that might help, because people get busy.
Sure.
Forgot about that little flyer or something.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything else, ladies and gentlemen? If not, then I'll call the meeting to end. And I appreciate you being here very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.